Yeah, Mother's Day. You can't get a bottle today, but you can get one on Mother's Day. We've had an emphasis on the community. We're going to talk about missions and ministry this morning and opportunities that you might have. And by God's grace, encourage you to get involved, perhaps in ways that maybe you haven't thought about or ways that you find intimidating or frightening. We'll come to that. It's good to be back. I got back just yesterday afternoon, late in the day. God did some really remarkable things while we were there. It wasn't as hectic a trip as it has been in the past, but he opened some doors for some team building and some time together, and I'm remarkably thankful for that. The message for this morning is entitled, this is our Missions and Ministry Sunday. This is part two of a series that I actually began last year, Why I'm Committed to Missions. This is the second part of that opportunity. It's Be the Church Sunday, and we're focusing on things that you can do to be involved, whether it's in the community or around the world. And I arrived back from the Philippines just yesterday, as I said. I did get to spend some time with Steve and Jen at the beginning of the week. I didn't get a lot of time with them. They actually headed up for the Bukolot Conference, and they drove up north to attend the Bukolot Conference, and I actually have a map here. This is the island of Luzon. For those of you who recognize it, Luzon continues further north and quite a bit further south. Manila is right here in this bottom left corner. Steve and Jen actually drove up to the Bukolot Conference, which was up in this area to the west of the Sierra Madre. And in fact, they went the east side of the Sierra Madre on the way up there. They took a highway that went through Baler and then on up here to Casiguran and then further north and came into the Bukolot from the east rather than from the west. A lot of you have been there and made that trip from the west, but that brought back some memories I'm going to share with you in a little while, because back in the old days that wasn't as possible as it is now. But I did want to share with you that I'm going to talk to you about ministry and missions and the involvement that you might want to have. I'm going to share some of the perspective of what God's done in our lives as a couple and as a family and some of the things that keep us motivated and moving in that direction. I did bring this up here. This is the Bukolot coffee, the Arabica. This is pure Arabica. And I wanted you to see this as well. This is actually, we're calling it Black Label at this point, and there's a reason for that. There are several different, at least four different main species of coffee. Arabica is one of them. Another very common species of coffee is Robusta, and this is primarily Robusta. This is Jack You Up coffee, is really what it is. This makes a great morning coffee. This makes a great dessert coffee for those of you who are. And part of the reason that I wanted to say it, this is Bukolot Blend, for those of you that remember when we had that before. Part of the reason that I wanted to say that is that this is an opportunity to be involved in that project over there half a world away and end up with a cup of coffee at the same time. So they're back there at the kiosk, and if you're interested, then God bless you in that. Steve and Jen made this trip up the east side, as I said, and back in the days, back in the old days when Faith and I were missionaries there and I used to do a lot of consultant work, there actually wasn't a highway there. Even with what we used to call a weapon, Filipino for weapon, which is a 6x6, six drive wheels, six speeds forward. You weren't able to make your way up there. Sorry, I pushed the wrong button. You weren't able to make your way up there, and so I've often made the trip when I was doing consultant work up in Casiguran. I often made the trip between Casiguran and Baler by boat. Because it was really the only way to get there other than by airplane. And just so we're clear, the boat that we're talking about is not a great big sailing vessel. You actually saw the picture of it. This is called in Tagalog, that's called a lanza, which is just, it's kind of a launch. But you can see that it's an outrigger canoe. It's a rather narrow vessel and has these large outriggers on the side. And I wanted to share a story because it came back to me when I thought about Steve and Jen heading up there. I know I've told some of you this story, but it goes back quite a ways to the days when, well, it happened one time that I was on my way back from Kasiguran, where there's a tribal group called the Agta, which are related to the group that Steve and Jen work with. The Dumagat is the name that they go by, but they're Agta, Aita, Eta group. And I was on a boat like that launched from Kasiguran, and as the day wore on, just this beautiful summer breezy day. It's always a summer day in the Philippines. And one of the things that, you know, I can just recommend is that if you ever have the opportunity to take that trip or a trip like that, this is the best part of the boat right there. You can kind of lay there on the deck, that part right there, and the sea breezes come at you, and you're not confined down in the hold of the ship. And actually, I did spend some time. I kind of put a little board out there and was laying out there. I lost my wallet in the course of doing that, so I regretted that later. But that isn't what this story is about. We were riding on that boat, and it was just, you know, calm seas, and we were riding along the shoreline of Luzon, The waves, I noticed, were starting. We were rocking more than we had before, and I wasn't too worried about it because it was, you know, it's that outrigger canoe, and it's quite wide, and if you're in seas heavy enough to tip that over, to flip that thing, well, then you really shouldn't be out there anyway in the first place. But the seas were getting a little rockier, a little heavier, and eventually a little more, I guess we would call them violent, and then one of the cabin boys came up, sent by the captain, and he said that the captain was asking everybody to come below deck because as it got dark, they were expecting the results of a typhoon that had taken place out in the Pacific, and those swells were going to be riding in, and they didn't want anybody up on the deck in the dark. And so very hesitantly, I made my way back down some steps that go from back in there and got in this area right here. Only there weren't all those windows. This is not the boat that I was in. There weren't all those windows. There was only one little window along the side. And I'm sitting with 20 or 30 other people all crammed into this area. The big diesel engine that runs the thing is down there with us. And the seas are getting noticeably heavier because we keep going. You know, the wave comes in and then you slide down the wave and then it breaks over the other side and it drops into place. And it was getting a little crazy, I got to admit. It's getting real crazy, in fact. And that's when I happened to notice that there was a lady kind of sitting like right across from me here. We were trying to avoid each other's knees. I don't know if you've been in cramped conditions like that, but we were trying to avoid each other's knees, and she reached for a bag, and she pulled out a plastic bag, and I thought to myself, she's going to have a snack. You know, this seems like an odd time to have a snack, but she's going to have a snack. And in fact, I was wrong about that, but I couldn't have been more wrong. In fact, she didn't get it out to have a snack. She actually got it out to de-snack. That's what she was going to do. She had had a snack earlier in the day, and we were all able to tell what it was that she had snacked on earlier in the day. You want to call it unsnacking, but unsnacking is like not snacking, and it really wasn't unsnacking. It really was she de-snacked into that bag. And remarkably, I mean, we were in such close quarters there, I wasn't the only one that saw. So, you know, the boat is doing this and slapping back down, and now there's a lady sitting right across from me who has just de-snacked, and everybody has noticed that, and so, well, now everybody is de-snacking. It was just kind of, I don't know, like a school thing or something, you know, class thing. It was like being at a dance when you don't know how to, and you don't want to dance, you know, you've been to one of those, and there's a few things in life that I hate more than de-snacking, and so I started to quote John 3:16 to myself. Actually, I was quoting it backwards. I didn't know that I could quote it backwards. And the reason that I was doing that is I was trying to think of anything other than the 30 people who were now de-snacking, just kind of it was like a de-buffet is what it was. At that point, it was just going on everywhere. And, you know, the way the boat was, every now and again, we could see this one light there off to the west, you know, there's this, and then it would be gone again, and it was really clear that this was going to be, you know, an eventful evening, and I'm happy to be able to say that by daybreak, as the sun came up, we were able to see where, you know, they were going to put the boat ashore. They didn't want to make a run at it in the dark, even though we arrived, so we stayed out longer than we typically did, and And once they were able to see their way clear, we kind of rowed the swells in and docked the boat, and we got off, and I managed to not de-snack. And I've thought about that trip often. It's not the most eventful trip I've ever taken, but it was up there, you know, maybe in the top 5 or 10 or so. And I've thought about that trip often. As those seas came up, and as the waves began to build, and as the wind picked up, we weren't in a full typhoon by any measure, but as it got more and more violent, I started to regret that I was in that boat. You know, it would have been better to have been on land. But given the fact that we couldn't get to land, it occurred to me that even though I didn't like being in that boat with all of that de-snacking that was going on and the violent waves and all of that, that the only thing that might have been worse at that particular moment would have been if something had happened that forced us out of the boat. Would you agree with that? Something that, because being in a small boat in a big storm, you know, when the winds are blowing and the waves are large, is not a terribly comfortable thing. And probably the only thing that would be more comfortable would to be out of that small boat. Well, you probably have figured out where I'm going with this, but I wonder what it would have taken to get me to move from where I was there underneath, to go back up onto the deck, supposing they would have let me, to have walked across that tipping and tilting deck over to the edge, to actually come to this maybe front corner right here, make my way down there, and then step out into the water in the dark. Can you imagine? I can't even begin to imagine. What would it have taken to get me to do that? Well, you know, abandoned ship, I suppose, would have been the thing. I'm not sure about that, but you may remember there's a Bible story about this, about a group of guys that were kind of minding their own business, at least doing what they were told to do, and found themselves in a situation in the middle of a storm with heavy winds. And, well, a guy named Peter is actually going to walk to the gunwale of that boat and step out onto the surface of this raging, tossing sea. And the question that I'm asking myself this morning is, why? Why would he have done that? Why would he have stepped out? Why would he have ventured out into those conditions? What could have prompted a man to do such a thing? And so as I tell you the story this morning from Matthew chapter 14, verses 22 to 33, I want you to think about that. I want you to listen for what rationale this guy might have had for what he's about to do. And with that background, this is the story from God's Word from Matthew chapter 14. Earlier on in the beginning of the story, before this story unfolds, Jesus has been traveling with his followers, and he's in a particular place and receives some very difficult to hear news. He was a cousin to John the Baptizer, and we don't know how much time they spent together when they were growing up, but he was family. And Jesus eventually would say about this man that prior to the advent of the church, prior to the day when the Spirit of God came to live within people permanently, that there never was a man like him. John the Baptist was the pinnacle of the prophets and all of that old covenant history that we've been talking about during our time in Hebrews, which we'll get back to next week, by the way. Jesus has just heard that John the Baptist is there at a king's whim, or at least the whim of a woman that knew the king, that was married to the king, not actually his first wife, but the wife of his brother. It's a long, complicated story, and John had gotten involved, and well, the king decided that John should be dispatched. And so he arranges for John's death. Jesus took it very hard. I mean, we're not accustomed to thinking that about Jesus, but he was human like we are. He was God in human form, but he was human. He had a breakable heart. And when he got the news about John, he decided that he needed some time alone. And so he got into a boat with his followers, and he decided that they were going to go to this kind of out-of-the-way place, that they would travel by water to a place where they could just be quiet, and he could adjust to this news that he had heard about John. And the people saw him get in the boat and figured out where he was going, and this huge crowd made their way around Lake Gennesaret, the Sea of Galilee, and actually anticipated where he would be. And when he arrived, here are these thousands of people that he was still responsible to minister to, and he knew it. He responded to all of that by being loving and gentle and gracious and actually feeding 5,000 people. That's where the story of the 5 loaves and 2 fish come in, this little boy's lunch. He spent that day with them, and at the end of the day, he turned to his followers, and he said, I want you to get into the boat, and I want you to go to the other side of Lake Gennesaret. I want you to travel from the east side over to the west side, and there wasn't any real promise of meeting them there, but this is what I want you to do. So they got in the boat, and they started across, and as they were making their way across, it began to get dark, and so Jesus went back and dismissed the people, told them to go home, that it was time to go home, finally. They headed off, and Jesus went up into a mountain to pray. He spent all night in prayer. And early the next morning, well, it was so early that the sun was not up yet. It's that darkest part of the night. You know what I'm talking about. He made his way down to the edge, to the shore, and set his foot, instead of going wading like you and I would at that particular moment, he actually put his foot on top of the water and then just began to walk across to the other side. It's dark. The followers, in the meantime, had been doing, trying to do what Jesus had told them to do. They're trying to get across to the other side of Gennesaret, to the other side of the Sea of Galilee. But the wind is against them, and they didn't have a big enough motor. In fact, they didn't have a motor at all. They're rowing, and they're trying to use the sail, but the wind is coming off of the shore, and it's in their face, and they're not really able to do this thing that Jesus has asked them to do. Jesus, in the meantime, comes walking across the water, and, well, he's not going to stop by the boat. They're busy doing what he's asked them to do, but he's not going to stop by the boat. He's going to go to the other side, and he anticipates greeting them when they're over there. But somebody sitting there in the boat in that darkness, I don't know if you're aware of this, but peripheral vision is always better than looking at something straight on. I find when I'm hiking at night, I glance at the trail like this to see what's there, and well, somebody out of their peripheral vision catches some movement. Now everybody's looking at whatever that is, and as they would, well, it's human, whatever it is, but it's not swimming, and it's not, and it's walking. Ah! They begin to scream, you know, when in danger, when in doubt, run in circles, scream and shout. That's the way they respond. There's a ghost over there, and so this is terrifying, and Jesus, in the meantime, he must have been smiling to himself, because this is the future of the church. These are the guys that are going to take the gospel around the world into all of the darkness, and they're screaming about a ghost that's out there. So he says, hey, boys, hey, whoa, 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 time out. It is I. It's me. You have nothing to be afraid of. Show a little courage, will ya? And now they're hunkered down and holding on. They've apparently stopped trying to get to the other side as they deal with whatever that is out there. Now they realize that it's Jesus. And this is my favorite part of the story, because this guy, Peter, who's hunkered down with everybody else, holding on for dear life, looks across the waves over there and shouts out to Jesus, Lord, if that's you over there, call me to come to you. Call me to come to you. And I know there was a smile on his face when he said, well, come on then. Come on. And that's when Peter, in the midst of all the moving and waves and wind, that's when Peter walked over to the gunwale and stepped out onto the water and began to walk toward Jesus. And he was doing great. We don't know how long it went on. We don't know how long he lasted, how long he kept his eyes above the waves like that. But he walked on water. And then at some point, it must have been quite a distance, because it sounds like Jesus was at some distance from them. Perhaps he began to walk towards Peter, but now Peter's walking towards him. And as he gets close to Jesus, it suddenly occurs to him, it seems like, what he's doing. Or at least what's going on around him as he does it. He doesn't have the gift of walking on water. He's able to walk on water because Jesus is helping him to do it. And as he gets close enough to Jesus to reach out and touch him, that's when he notices the waves and the wind and the darkness and the situation that he's in and what he's caused for himself at this point. And the moment he's distracted from Jesus and distracted by the circumstances, that's when he begins to sink, and he shouts out to Jesus, "Lord, save me, help me." And Jesus immediately reaches down. It wasn't one of those, "Well, you made your bed, you're going to lie in it, bucko." Jesus immediately reaches down and helps him back up under the surface of the water, and then says to him, "Oh, Peter, how can your faith be so small? How is it that you would doubt me in this situation?" They turn around then and they make their way back to the boat, and we don't know what happens when they get there, who helps who into the boat, but before you know it, everybody's back in the boat. Jesus is there with them, and well, they're on their way to shore, but before they did any of that, they actually, the men that were gathered there, that wasn't one of those attaboy Peter moments. It was one of those moments when they recognized who was with them. And they actually fell down before him and worshiped him and said, "We know now. We know as surely as we've ever known anything that you are the Son of God, God in human form." And within the next few moments, they were back on the other shore. And that is the story from God's Word. Can we all agree for a moment that Peter had a moment there? Would you agree with me on that one? How many here have ever walked on water? Well, maybe you have without realizing it, but Peter had a moment there. I mean, he had one of those moments that very few of us have ever had or experienced. He was walking on water. It's a very unusual thing. At least, apparently, no one in this room has ever done that. I know some of you don't even know how to swim. So, I mean, that would be a problem in the first place. But he's out there walking on water. Life is all as it should be. I mean, it's as good as it gets. And then within a couple of breaths, suddenly, he's not walking on water anymore. He has slipped beneath the waves. The darkness has closed in. The waves are about to take him down. He's moments away from the end of it all. And the question that I'm asking this morning, because we're about to sing about this, the question I'm asking you this morning is when life is all as it should be and you find yourself walking on water, what's the response of your heart? Or when the darkness closes in, do you respond differently at that point? Let's think about that as we worship. So it's clear at this point that Peter walked on water, had an experience that not all of us have. And we're asking the question, why? Why did he walk on water? Not how, but, well, it's not even the question just yet, why did he get out of the boat, but why did he walk on water? And the answer to that one is simple. He walked on water because Jesus helped him to walk on water. He did not have the gift of walking on water. This is not something he did as a regular ministry thing. This is something that he did for a particular season in his life. So he walked on water because Jesus helped him to walk on water, which leads me to the next question, because I want to learn from what happened to Peter. Why did Jesus help him walk on water? And again, the answer to that one is simple. Jesus helped him to walk on water because Peter got out of the boat. That's how it works. Peter got out of the boat, and that's why Jesus helped him. That's why he was able to walk on water. And before this turns into a circular argument, you know, we could spend the rest of the day just saying that, but before it turns into a circular argument, as we're talking about this question, why did he do that? Why would he care to do that? Why did he get out of the boat when everybody else stayed hunkered down? You heard the story, right? You did not hear me say that when Peter and Jesus got back to the boat, that Jesus looked at the other 11 guys that were there and said, "What's the matter with you guys? Huh? Why didn't we all take a little stroll on the water?" I don't know if Jesus would have been able to catch 12 guys as they sunk below the waves, but 11 guys stayed hunkered down. And listen to me, Jesus didn't rebuke them for that. He didn't tell them that they were on the wrong track. He didn't tell them that they had failed to trust him. He didn't rebuke them at all. But Peter got out of the boat. Peter walked on water. Peter was able to find the courage to get to the side and step out. And it occurs to me this morning, if we're focusing on Peter, that perhaps if I can figure out why Peter would do that, that maybe that would be the response of my heart as well. Maybe if we could figure this out, maybe it would encourage us to get out. When God calls you out upon the waters, it's such an easy song to sing. We sing this at least once a month. When he calls us out on the waters, oceans, you know that song that we love so much? But in order to actually get out on the waters, you've got to get out of the boat. So why would we want to do that? But maybe it would encourage us to get out of the boat. Because here's the thing. Maybe we can all walk on water. Could those other guys that hunkered down, could they have walked on water? Somebody say, yes. Okay, I'm working with you. I get it. It's scary to talk in church, isn't it? I know. Nobody knows that more than I do. Maybe we can all walk on water. We just don't know it yet. Maybe there are things that you could do that you'd surprise yourself if you were to actually attempt them. Because I'm pretty sure that Peter was surprised. We know that he was surprised. I mean, he did have that moment when he sank. And I get it, and I know that sermons are built on that all the time. But Peter walked on water. He walked on water because he was willing to walk to the edge of the boat. And so I guess the question I'm asking is, why would he get out of the boat? Well, sometimes there are reasons for getting out of the boat. We might get out of the boat if the boat is headed in the wrong direction. That might be one reason why we would do that. I got on a plane, this has been several years ago, but I'd had one of those, you know, preppy flight crews. Not the flight crew, but the cabin crew. I always like that when, you know, they want to guess, you know, guess the age of the flight crew, the collective age of the flight, when, and, you know, you want to say, well, you know, we talked about it, and we're going to guess 9. Because that's the way it seems, you know, everybody, because they're having a lot more fun on the plane, and there's all these jokes, and one of the ladies, but she really did make my day. She got up, and she made this announcement, this is flight 6125, bound for Denver, and then she said this, I love it, if your plans did not call for you to go to Denver today, they do now. Because that's where this plane is going. We were backing out already. And, you know, you expect that they looked at everybody's boarding pass. But, well, whenever you go to, you know, you get in a plane with a bunch of people that are going to Denver, well, you're going to Denver. That's how you're going to spend your time. I wonder if you've thought very much lately about the direction that the world is going. We're not all going to Denver this afternoon, but we're surrounded by people. Solomon, so many years ago, and I know we talk about how bad things are right now, but Solomon said so many years ago, there's a way that seems right to a person, but it ends in death. Jesus himself talked about the road that leads to destruction and how wide and easy it is to walk and how many there are that find it. That's the direction that the world is going. And the truth is, when we travel with someone, we end up where they end up. If there's a group of people getting into a car to go to Lebanon, Missouri this afternoon, and you get in that car with them, listen to me, you don't get to be surprised when you arrive in Lebanon. If you know the car is going to Lebanon and you ride with them, you're going to end up where they end up. That's how it works. You don't get to say, oh, I would have preferred to be in Jeff City right now. If you preferred to be in Jeff City, you should have gotten in a car that was going to Jeff City. See, this is why they asked me to do this, because I am so profound. When the car is going to Lebanon, when the bus is going to Lebanon, if the plane is going to Lebanon, you probably shouldn't go, but when you travel with someone, you end up where they are. And the world is full of it. It's full of advice about how to get to a place where you're going to be happy, where you're going to be satisfied. Movies and television, and they try to sell us on the idea that if you had more, have you caught that? If you had more money, if you had more position, if you had more power, if you had more authority, if you had more house, if you had more car, then you would be happy, you would be satisfied. And the sad part is, we fall for it. We think that if we have more things, that we'll be as satisfied as the world is, and that is absolutely true. We will be as satisfied as they are. But I challenge you to show me a person out there who spent his entire life gathering and amassing things and now is lying on his deathbed, who will look at you and say, my life was worth these things that I have. And I'm not against things, but if you're going to spend your life heading in that direction, you're headed for disappointment, because there is no satisfaction out there. The world does not have it to offer. Another reason that you might have for getting out of the boat is if the boat is full of the wrong people. I have a friend who, well, years ago, he used to do his mission sermons by getting in character. He would actually dress up as a tribal person. He was pretty hard to recognize at that point. He'd have a spear and bow and arrow, and he'd sit in the front up here, and then the pastor would introduce him, and it was very dynamic, absolutely dynamic. And one time, he got invited to a city that he'd never been to before, and to a church that he'd never been to before, and he got there a little early, and he thought to himself, I wonder if the doors are open. And so he went, and he opened the door. It wasn't locked up. They didn't have the alarm on or anything. So he went in, and he got into his tribal gear with his spear and his bow and arrow and the wig, and he sat there in the front row and just kind of hunkered in and just was quiet, waiting for some kind of reaction. And he could hear behind him as people began to come in, there's this commotion going on back there in the back of the church. But he doesn't want to turn around and talk to them because, well, he doesn't want to spoil the surprise of the pastor introducing him. And then finally he hears, excuse me, can we help you? So he turns around and he's a little bit surprised to see a rather large group of black people standing back there, just kind of talking to one another. And the person who had spoken to him spoke up again and said, can we help you? And that's when it occurred to him that he said, do you know who I am? No, they said. Are you not expecting me? No, they said. Is it possible, he said, that I'm in the wrong church? To which the pastor replied, we certainly hope so. We don't know why you're here, but take it and go somewhere else with it. And, well, he ended up late at the church where he was supposed to be. He was at the wrong church, surrounded by the wrong people, and headed in a direction that, well, they weren't prepared to go with him. The same thing is true of the world that surrounds us. A lot of us got out of that boat a long time ago. We recognized that it was headed in the wrong direction. And so we got out of the boat and we moved on on our own. But we've managed to surround ourselves with people who continue to influence us. People who are still headed in the wrong direction. And I am not talking about cloistering yourself and getting away from those folks, but we need to learn to make a difference between the people that we intend to influence and the people that we will allow to influence us. We can't take ourselves out of the world, but we need to sort out the people that we're going to allow to influence us, the people that we're going to allow to pull us in the right direction. Because I don't know if you've noticed it or not, but that's a minefield out there. And it's amazing how many lives crash and burn as a result of drugs or as a result of possessions or as a result of chasing after things that cannot satisfy. That's the problem with the world out there. They offer pleasure without satisfaction, and pleasure without satisfaction is addiction. And so sometimes we have to get out of the boat because it's headed in the wrong direction. Sometimes we get out of the boat if it's full of the wrong people, but let's get back to the disciples. We're talking about Peter. He was in a boat that was going where? Exactly where Jesus told them to go. He's headed across to the other side with the rest of the guys. And I know that Judas is in the boat, but these are the future of the church. These are the apostles to be. And so the boat is not full of the wrong people. Why on earth would he get out? It's headed in the right direction. But listen to me. For Peter, the boat was missing the thing that was most important in life to him. Because he was in the boat with his buddies, but Jesus was out there. And that's where that line comes from. Peter is willing to walk to the edge. In fact, he is willing to risk it all just to be near Jesus. Listen to me. This is not a ministry choice that Peter is making. It occurs to him that he is in the boat and Jesus is out there. And I love those words. Lord, if that's you out there, parenthetically, then what am I doing here? If that's you out there, call me to come to you. And I don't know how many of you have ever prayed that prayer. We're not talking about a vocation. We're not talking about a ministry or a ministry choice. Peter is willing to risk it all. Do you have any idea how much Jesus meant to Peter? Do you have any idea how how sweet the relationship he had with him. He was willing to leave the safety and the security of the boat to walk across the water, not knowing whether he would succeed, just for the sake of being near Jesus. And as they get back to the boat, a powerful moment is going to happen when all of the rest of the followers actually will bow down in front of him and claim him to be the Son of God, God in human form, Creator God, who has come to live among his people. That's worth celebrating. The wind goes where you send it. So will I. I love that thought. I know our time is just about up. But I want to remind you, we've been talking about Peter. The man who was hunkered down and could have, should have been content to be there in the safety of the boat, to just ride out the waves, ride out the storm. And it would have been okay if he had chosen to do that. But it's not okay to Peter, as he sits there in the boat and realizes that the boat is missing the one thing that is most important to him in all of the world. And that's when he calls out, "If that's you over there, Lord, call me to come to you." Next part of this is just kind of tricky. But I wonder if you've identified the boat in your life. We're so glad to have homes that have roofs and walls and to be able to shelter from the storms there, to be able to keep warm. We're so glad to have a place like this where we can all get together and hold on to one another and hunker down. But I know from personal experience what it's like to have that moment wash over your soul. Will you realize that for you, where I realize that for me, Jesus wasn't in the boat of my home. He wasn't in the boat of my church. I'm not saying that we should worry that he's not here with us this morning. He is. But I had a deep, abiding sense that he was over there in Asia calling me. Faith and I sat down together at that particular moment, and I asked her, Are you sensing it? Do you see it? He's over there. He's calling us. And so we said goodbye. We said goodbye to people that love us, to people that we were close to, and we headed over there. And for what it's worth, we've discovered that what goes around comes around, because we weren't paying attention to what it was doing to my mom or to Faith's mom and dad or to our families over there or to our church, to have us just uproot and head out into the darkness. We should have paid more attention, because we might have been more prepared for the day that came when our oldest daughter and her family headed for the Philippines, and our son headed for Asia, and our youngest daughter and her family headed for Asia as well. And now I have a sweet granddaughter who will graduate June 1st, and she's looking at the horizon and saying, "He's out there. He's calling me." I wonder if you're sitting there wondering what this has to do with you. I'm just one of the 11 that's hunkering down. I get that. But I wonder if maybe, I'm convinced, in fact, that you can walk on water. You just don't know it yet. Because that opportunity to go on a missions trip, yeah. But that opportunity to help in Sunday school, that opportunity to take care of Potter's kids, that opportunity to get involved with the youth in our community, that opportunity to participate in Relay for Life or in the Pregnancy Help Center or where? Talk to me about it. Because I know you've sensed it. I know you hear those announcements and you think about small group or just being involved there, and it's scary. And they're asking you to be involved, and you know, no, small group, that's where you just sit around and complain to each other about what a miserable week you had. Oh, come on. Come on. You might be surprised. But when they ask you to get involved, it feels like they're asking you to walk on water. Well, that's just not me. I know. But what if? What if you were to just walk to the edge of the boat and step out onto the waves? What if? What if you were to discover at the end of that day that, doggone it, you can walk on water? Not necessarily you have the gift of it, but you can walk on water. Why did Peter walk on water? Because Jesus helped him. And why did Jesus help him? Because Peter got out of the boat. So that's a challenge I want to lay before you this morning. It's so simple on a Sunday morning to sit and soak, to worship, to lift up his name, to glorify him. But I'm telling you, my heart will never be content with merely that. That's why I go as often as I do. That's why our kids have gone. And I know he hasn't singled us out as special. I know he's talking to you. And it might not be something far away. It might be something down the street. But I am challenging you. We've got kids going away to college. And I hope as you go, as you graduate, as you step out there, that you're not going to be pursuing a career, that you're not going to be pursuing a ministry, that you're not going to be pursuing anything that this world has to offer. I hope you're going because you intend to pursue Christ. That he's out there calling you, whether it's to whatever field it is or to whatever way you might serve. I hope that he is living at the center of your life and you sense him out there. And mom and dad, I hope that you're encouraging your children to live for something bigger than themselves. I don't mean that as a rebuke. I just mean that, yeah, there were a bunch of guys that stayed safe that night, hunkered down. But one guy, one guy, he walked on water. And on any day that you manage to walk on water, I just got to say, that's a pretty good day. So stop being afraid. Stop hesitating. Get out there and get involved because your community needs you. Your church needs you. The people out there in the darkness, they need you. They need the influence that your life of faith can provide for them. And I'm committed to the truth and the reality that you can walk on water. You just don't know it yet. Will you stand with me in the presence? Our Father and our God, thank you today for the kindness that you've shown us. Thank you for these videos that we've watched and the worship time that we've had together, the way our hearts have been joined to agree that there is no God like you. With no frame of reference, no point of reference, you created light. And you've done the same thing in our souls. And you want to use us to take the light to people out there in the darkness. And we pray, God, that you would send us out there. That we would remember, Father, this morning that we've just huddled up. That's all we've done this morning. We're going to go out there and we're going to run a play for the sake of your glory. For the good of those that we'll run into. God, I pray that you would help every one of us here, not only to understand that we can walk on water, but to long for it because it gets us closer to you. For the sake of the King and the good of those who need to hear his name, we ask these things. Amen and amen. If you're new here, we're glad you're here. We end every Sunday like this. Long story behind it. But we've just quarterbacked to play, and we're headed out there. We've huddled up. And so I'm going to say, ready? Go get them, Potter's House.